Today we're talking about relationships. That's going to include family, friends, lovers, dating, and, dare I say it, sex. Jeremy. Yeah. This is pretty much, I think, where this podcast was born, where we were having our now renowned lunches and having a chat about various different things in terms of the impact, I think, of cancer and cancer diagnosis and cancer treatment, crucially, on relationships.
All of those, absolutely. And some positives, some negatives, and actually very different experiences with the two different cancers we've got.
Absolutely. But also then we've got a very similar experience because we have both had the same drug at some point, different times, but the same drug, which is interesting. It's ironic that this podcast is called How Long Have You Got? Because I think, strap yourselves in, this could be a long one, which is good, yeah, sure. But we've got a lot to talk about. So I think it's probably a really good place to start with family. Families are all different shapes and sizes. I think it's really important to state that. But I believe that one of the biggest impacts of a cancer diagnosis after its impact on you as the person is on your family, whatever that looks like. I mean, you've got a wonderful husband, wonderful children.
Yeah, lovely ex-wife, many strings to my family, all of them rather marvellous. So,
And so how did you find telling them, and also how has it been for them over the period of time?
I think it's really hard for family. For my children, I think they were just so shocked by it. I think that the thought of your father being ill and the thought of losing your father is a really hard thing to grapple with. Even, you know, they're 31 and 28 now, so they're not children. Just my children. So it's hard for them. And then for your family, they're just so shocked by the news, as are you. But what's hard for them in a way is it's not their body, it's not their mind, and it's not always their decisions. So it's really hard for them to second guess what you want, what you're thinking, how you're going to cope with it. Because you feel as if you don't have any control at the beginning. And then they have even less control than you, because it's like second tier down control, isn't it? And also for your partner, if you have a partner when you're going through this, he or she or they will get asked so many questions. And so I think it's really tough for them, because everyone thinks, oh, well, I won't bother Jeremy because, God, he's going through all this, but I'll go and ask Simon. So Simon was just inundated constantly for months. Any news? What's happening? What do they say? So he very much became the partner of someone with cancer. So it was really hard for him. I mean, he handled it beautifully, but I did feel sorry for him. And I think it's very important to take into account how hard, I know it's really hard for the person who's got cancer, but actually it's really hard for your family. And as much as possible, try and bear that in mind and feel sorry for what they're going through as well as you.
My circumstances are quite different because my family is a lot different shape to yours. Yes. I'm an only child, and for a mother to think that they're going to lose their only child is something that, whilst being my moral support, my hope, my person who takes me to all my appointments, she probably wants to spend a significant amount of time crying in a dark room because she hasn't got the solution. She can't fix it. She hasn't got the answers. I'm so lucky to have her. She's amazing.
She's amazing, your mum, absolutely.
She's fabulous. She's slightly nutty, and I think that's where I get it from. but I wouldn't have her any other way. But to be in that situation where you think you're going to lose a child, I don't have children, so I can't.
It's completely unnatural. And it must be so tough for her. And she's an amazing woman, but it's a really hard, and also hard for you because you know that that's what she's thinking, and that stresses you as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't let it stress me because I think that would make it worse for her, but I know that she's thinking it, and it breaks my heart, truly. The other issue around family and a cancer diagnosis, particularly a situation where it's treatable but not curable, is that I now am really worried about what happens when I'm not here and what happens to my mum in her old age. And I think that that's a really difficult thing to get your head around mentally as well. I think also when in my original diagnosis, my partner at the time was very unsure about what to do, what the right thing to do was, and almost felt like they'd become this crazy passenger in a strange journey where actually also true. That they didn't matter in some ways because all of the focus goes on the cancer patient. Yeah. And actually what's really important, and I will say this really early on in this one, is that are there to give support to friends and family as well as the cancer patient. And I think that is crucial to get out there. And if people need it, they should get it early. Don't wait. That's a real big message for me, yeah. because I think it's very complex for family members. They want to be there to boost your morale and make you feel better, mm. but they are facing potentially losing a father, mother, daughter, son, family member. It's really difficult if you're going to lose a loved one, yeah. or potentially lose a loved one, not definitely. And that's terrifying for them as well.
Really terrifying. And also, there isn't a rule book for dealing with a partner or relative who's got cancer. So it's really hard for those people. And Simon handled it really beautifully. But of course, he made mistakes where he'd try and do something really helpful and it wasn't what I wanted. I mean, he wasn't to know that. And he sort of, which sounded a good idea, he set up a WhatsApp group because so many people were asking the whole time how I was and was there any news, had the results come through, had the treatment plan come through. And got exhausting for him the whole time to get those messages. So he thought, well, I'll just set up a WhatsApp group. And I didn't know about this. And I'll just give them updates as we get them as to what's going on with Jeremy and his diagnosis and treatment. And I was kind of horrified that this whole group of my friends and family were getting these messages, but I didn't know what they were saying. He did it for the right reasons, and it sort of makes logical sense, but somehow it made me feel a bit weird. Mm. That I didn't know what they were reading. Again, maybe it's the control freak thing. Mm. I wasn't editing what everyone was hearing. So sometimes they make really beautiful decisions, but they aren't the right ones for you.
Yeah, and it comes from such a good place.
Oh yeah, 100%.
But it goes back to something that I will say in every single episode, and I definitely have said in an earlier episode, and that is ask the person yeah. who is dealing with the diagnosis and the treatment. Ask them, I've had an idea.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking I'm going to set up a WhatsApp group, and what do you think?
Yeah.
And then at least...
That's so true.
I mean, that's just one particular idea. What was interesting to me was I got some of my family were a bit like, well, I don't think you should tell anybody at the moment. It's like, it's my news to decide whether I want to tell or not. And I understand, you know, it's all of it's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
But actually, it's not for others to tell you how to go through this journey, which is kind of ironic because is that what we're doing on this podcast? I don't know.
Well, no, we're just sharing our stories. Maybe we can tell more than any, I hope. Yeah. But you're right. I remember someone saying to me, I wouldn't tell anyone if I had cancer. And I sort of thought, well, that's weird because I shouldn't be ashamed of having cancer. You know, it wasn't a punishment, and it wasn't because I ate too many pies. So why should I not? You know, so it is weird how people interpret it in different ways. But I think you're right. Ask the person. But also be aware that sometimes we'll be snippy, we'll change our minds, we'll be grumpy. You will get it wrong sometimes, but it's not your fault. It's our fault for being unhelpful, even though we're going through what we're going through, I think.
But also, I think it's really important to say it's nobody's fault, really. I think mostly the crazy statistic is that 1 in 2 people are going to be affected by cancer at some point in their lifetime. An absolutely crazy statistic, really, when you think about it. But still, I don't think it would matter whether you'd done this 1,000 times or never before. There is no right or wrong. Everybody's different. Everybody's life stages are different. Diagnosis are different. Treatment plans are different. Reaction to the same treatment yeah. is different. So ultimately, there is no right or wrong. But I think the big core message for me is always, particularly where relationships are concerned and those close to you, it is about communication. And one of the things I didn't do well, and I admit this wholeheartedly, mm-hmm. was communicate my needs at all.
Yeah.
To my partner at the time, to my mum, my stepdad, to my friends, really. And I'm blessed with the most wonderful friends who've done some absolutely incredible things for me. But I wasn't great at communicating my needs.
No, and it takes a while to get to know what helps other people as well as yourself, doesn't it? And of course, lots of people will ask you how you are the whole time, and that gets quite tiring, as we've talked about before, and quite stressful. So, but it's really hard for them to know, because it'd be weird if they didn't ask you how you were, but then it's weird if they ask you too much. So the balance is so hard for them. But I think, again, just tell people. Or some friends would say, just thinking of you, don't reply, I know it'd be knackered. And that was so good, because then if I wanted to, I could reply. And then I didn't feel bad if I didn't feel up to replying. So it was just saying, we're thinking of you, don't reply. You know, that's quite a good thing to do. So there's different ways of handling it. But your family, you just want them, as cliche as it sounds, to support you. And we have to realise that they are not going to know how to do this automatically. How would they?
Absolutely. So I think the core message for me is, if you have a family member or a loved one who is recently or going through a diagnosis, or even long down the journey, ask them how you can support them. Start there. How can I best support you? And see what they say. They might not exactly know how to answer that, but they'll hopefully try. And you can take it from there.
You can. And what I found actually weirdly, well, not weirdly, it makes total sense. The people who I found the easiest to communicate and the most helpful were friends who were going or have been through cancer themselves. Because you sort of do enter a little club in a way.
Cancer well, look club. At Woo! Us.
I know. And exactly. But you, it is helpful to talk to people on the same wavelength who have been through it. They do understand just that little bit more.
You're right. I think, like I've mentioned a number of times, there's so many different types and variations of cancer and stages, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many different types of treatment and responses. I keep mentioning that because it's so important to understand how individual a cancer journey is. But you're right. A lot of the mental roller coaster is the phrase I'm going to use. Mm-hmm. It is something that that person can directly relate to. And then as a result of that, you start to, as we have done, yep. Totally, that's why we're sat here doing this, is because then you start to find other things that you're like, oh yeah, that's how I felt. Or indeed, that's not how I felt, yep. But perhaps I can help you to feel a bit better about that. So yeah, it's complex, as we all know.
It is complex, but I found quite nice, without wishing to sound mercenary, but some people sent presents. Now, I don't mean, but they just send some grand coffee, so I don't have to go and get coffee, or they just send some chocolates I shouldn't be having, or they would just send a card that was really inappropriate and made me laugh. Black humour I found quite helpful. Or if they said, oh, it's no point buying your birthday present this year, shall I get you one now? And I sort of found the cheery, funny, slightly naughty sense, if you were, more helpful than some going, ooh, poor you.
And but I think those people knew you, Jeremy, yeah. Very well, because that is your sense of humour.
I
felt very, very loved. And I think that's actually a really core part of this, is that you want the person who's going through it to feel loved.
Yeah.
And supported.
Yeah.
And that they don't need to worry. They've got enough to worry about.
Yeah, true.
So anything that you can do as a friend or family member to alleviate any worry, whatever that looks like. It's like you said, sending you some ground coffee so you didn't yeah. have to go out to get a coffee. But also, I've heard stories about people, you know, making big, not ready meals, but like, you know, making a huge family-sized lasagna yeah. that can go in the freezer.
Which is great.
Well, absolutely. A friend of mine, she's an amazing lady called Lisa. She actually came and she was able to work from home at the time, just post-pandemic. And she came and she'd cook 3 times a week for me, and just help out and work from my house and take me out for walks and stuff when I was going through my first round of chemo. And just that, you know, yeah. I didn't have to think about the shopping, the cooking, the anything. I just, dinner was on the table.
Yeah.
And even that takes away just one little element yeah. of your life.
Yeah, super helpful, super sweet, and says everything without having to say everything.
Absolutely.
And some friends would turn up and say, oh, look, you probably don't want to talk about it, but don't worry, let's talk about other things if you don't. And they give me the choice of talking about it or
yeah.
not.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is choice is really good.
Yeah.
I had another friend as well who wasn't as able to visit me, and she did this most wonderful thing. She put into envelopes, all handwritten, lots of different envelopes, photos of memories, you know, printed photos yeah. of memories of ours over the years. And essentially on each one, it'd have a little message. So if you're feeling like you need a little lift, open this one. Or if you're feeling sad, open this one. Or if you want to have a little dance, yeah. open this one.
Oh, that's
and
it quite was sweet.
Just so beautiful. Just, and I, you know, I open them on different days.
Yeah.
And another useful thing, of course, is there's a lot of information out there around now nutrition mm-hmm. and its role in cancer.
I got sent so many nutrition and how to beat cancer through shepherd's pie books and things like that. Little bit inundated with sweet, kind, helpful books that, again, was information overload.
Right, and I think that's why I raised this,
yeah.
because there's so many things out there that are yeah. saying that, you know, if you stop eating sugar, you'll cure cancer.
Yeah.
And I tried it, it didn't work.
No, I tried. I lost loads of weight, but I didn't lose the cancer.
No, look, I can't say that caveat.
Sugar's probably not great for cancer.
I need a legal caveat there. But on a serious note, I think it's really important, again, back to the conversation that I often say about Google and its helpfulness in this situation. You've got to be careful about some of the information that you're sharing through those sorts
yeah,
of
true.
Books
and think about how much someone wants to go down all those different
yeah,
paths.
Again,
you know, if you want to send some, just cash. I just want to cash. Just send cash. That's the only thing that helps, honestly. So that conundrum sorted.
That's still on the cards, I think, actually.
But actually, not everything is through rosy-tinted spectacles. And what What shocked me when you told me, and other people have had this, is sometimes they lose a friend or two through cancer. Tell what happened.
Yeah, slightly less jovial conversation point. Unfortunately, there's been one or two people who have just disappeared out of my life. And I did, in the early stages of this, really dwell on that. And really feel very, very sad. Over this journey, I've become much more selfish.
Self-defense, yeah.
A really strange thing to say. I never considered myself to be a selfish person, but I actually now would consider myself to be fairly selfish. I think in some ways you've got to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't probably find it as upsetting now. But in those early days, when I just wanted that person who I've shared so much with over the years to just go for a cup of coffee or a little walk or something,
yeah,
it was really...
And did they ever say that they couldn't cope, or did they just disappear?
I think they've had their own challenges.
Yeah, of course.
And
there are other challenges apart from cancer people.
Right. Yep. I think that's a really important point as well, Jeremy, that you're making there. I often have a lot of my friends say to me, oh, I didn't want to bother you with X, Y, and Z because you've got your own stuff going on. It's like, yeah, but...
Everyone's problem is a problem.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
People have still got... And actually, I, despite my new selfish ways, I actually do want to help my friends.
Like, yeah, of course.
And actually, I think I've got a really amazing perspective on life now, which might make me a really useful friend.
It's surprising and it's shocking, but in a way, it sort of isn't at the same time, because not everyone can cope with everything and you have to give them their weakness, really, I suppose.
I've definitely become more forgiving as well during
this.
I don't have the time nor the energy to waste, or much, my road rage would tell you differently, on much anger or disappointment. I think on the whole, I try to spend as much time as possible just feeling happy.
Agree, and you know, save disappointment and anger for the big things.
Well, exactly.
There's ups and downs in that arena, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then with relationships, so we've both got, because I'm obviously married and in a relationship,
Well, when I was diagnosed with my original cancer, I was in a relationship with a really lovely, wonderful man. The challenge is that, as I have mentioned previously in this episode, I really struggled to communicate what I needed. Because I'm not sure that I knew what I needed.
Of course not, why would you?
And likewise, I think he was struggling with processing the fact that his partner, who was quite a little bit younger than him, was now going through this, and the whole life that we had planned was not looking like it was ever going to play out in
that
way.
Which is hard for both of you.
Very hard for everybody involved. But as a result, I think that very sadly began to create an erosion over time. And also, it's worth noting that cancer treatments really affect you as a person mentally and often physically. So as I have mentioned multiple times, I've had a bilateral mastectomy. That means both breasts removed. I have the most unbelievable surgeon, Santosh Sumasandran, will get a name drop. Don't all go queuing for him though. He's incredible. Who provided me with an astounding reconstruction, which I'm very happy with.
Yeah, you show me the pictures. They are pretty amazing. Yeah.
And as a result, you know, I feel very fortunate in many ways that has been the result of my surgery. But I do look different. Mm-hmm. You don't have any sensation in fully reconstructed breasts at all.
Right.
They're freezing cold, just a really weird point.
Right.
So there's a lot of things there. Also, you know, it's a whole new body that there's a lot of scars. Mm-hmm. I've literally got scars everywhere. I've got three all over my neck. I've got...
Explain why. Why have you got scars everywhere? Obviously, your breasts, because...
Yep, so I've got at least three on and around my breasts, and then I've got one under my arm from having a full lymph node clearance. Then I had a tumour removed in my neck and sent down for whole genomic sequencing to the Christie in Manchester, so that's left me with a little scar.
Right.
I also now have what they call a portocath in my chest. So
explain what that is, because I didn't know when you first told
me. So essentially that's a magnetic disc that sits under the skin with a tube in it that goes into the vein. and down towards my heart, which is how bloods are taken, how my treatments are given. It's fantastic, I must say, because it means that I can live a completely normal life. I can go swimming, I can do everything.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that with a PICC line, which I'd have previously, which is the tube on the outside of the body.
And this is so they don't keep having to put things into your body, they can just use this.
Yeah. For people who are having long-term treatment, I believe that the portacath is the way to go. And obviously, if you were to have a cannula in your hand every week.
And is your chemo through that too?
Everything. Yeah. Everything is through that.
So you have that,
So where the portacath goes, when they put that in, by the way, I'm just going to say, and I'm sorry if you're due to have a portacath fitted anytime soon. What a horrible experience that is, by the way, because you're awake and but loads of local anesthetic, but you can feel them fiddling about in your neck, and it's such a weird sensation. Anyway, once it's in, it's in. It's really, really good. But so as a result, you know, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 scars across the
and 2 new breasts.
And but it's important.
And you nipples tattooed on.
I have. Yeah. The most unbelievable.
Which is a good news bit of this, isn't it? Because they are amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. So it's 3D tattooing, which I was scared of needles before I got cancer. So this has been a whole new experience. This organization is called Tata. They are the Areola Tattoo Association. And I found a lady called Kay Smith. She's based in Ulverston, but the Tata representatives are around the country. And basically they're a training academy. And also they sponsor the artists. So Kay is a permanent makeup artist, but she also decided to train in this. And I went along expecting to pay.
Yeah.
And because of her involvement with Tata, the organization, and I will include the link to that organization in the show notes.
Sure.
I didn't have to pay at all.
They're brilliant. I mean, it's extraordinary.
They are remarkable. It really has put me back together again.
It has put you back together. But as you say, it's still a different body.
I'm not the same.
For a partner. And do you feel differently about your body?
Yeah. And I think there's other things as well, if I can say. Sorry, Anne, I feel like I'm going on a little bit about aesthetics.
You. Yeah, well, it's an important part of sex relationships.
But it is, isn't it? Particularly around...
How you feel about yourself.
Right. Mm. And obviously I've got no hair. So I've got no hair, no eyelashes, no eyebrows. No.
Amazing wigs.
I've got amazing wigs.
I mean, they are really amazing wigs.
I have got that. Again, I'll put some links if anybody's interested into where I've got that. And I'm actually getting a new hair system as well.
Of course, yeah.
So that's very exciting. But all of that, you know, I'm a whole different person. Let's be honest about it, Jeremy. I am not the person that I used to be with my big, thick, dark hair.
Yeah.
You know, breasts that were just natural and normal. And, you know, it is very different. And it takes a lot of getting used to for the person whose body it is.
Yeah.
And then to try and enable somebody else to understand what that can possibly be like. And for a long time, I didn't feel sexy in the slightest.
Yeah.
I felt like...
Did you want sex, though? Because with all the treatments, sometimes it can negate the desire.
No. So I have been medically... induced into menopause twice.
Right, gosh.
Come out of it twice, which is an interesting scenario. One of them being just treatment just created that environment in my body, but one of them was on a drug that we've both been on, or you're still
been
on.
Zoladex. The evil, well, I know it helps, but it still seems evil to me, Zoladex.
I mean, thank you to the people who created it.
Thanks.
For making us.
Thanks, no thanks.
But also, wow. I mean, it causes menopausal symptoms, doesn't it?
Yeah, in men and women, believe it or not. I'll explain some of that later.
And as you're familiar with, you don't want to be touched. I mean, let's not beat around the bush here. Like, so first of all, you've got a whole new body. Mm-hmm. You feel like, I personally felt like, do you remember that game that you used to play, Operation?
Yeah, of course, you used to love Operation. Yeah,
that's how I felt, basically. Yeah. I just, everything, my body was a science project.
Almost doesn't belong to you, does it? It becomes this sort of abstract thing that belongs to everyone. Yeah,
completely right. And it takes such a long time to try to get used to that. And then you've got this added complication of a hormone treatment that is just basically destroying any other hope of sexual desire in any way, shape or form. So then trying to have a relationship.
And maybe a relationship, maybe. I mean, I wasn't in it. That was perhaps coming to a natural end anyway, as relationships do. I don't know.
It was, due to other challenges around communication, appeared to be eroding. So the truth is, it's a tragedy.
Yes.
But it's happened.
Then. It happened and it's sad. But also for you, obviously poor him too, but for you, quite a lot to deal with, having cancer, the treatments and a relationship finishing. So how did you sort that in your head? Did you compartmentalise in a strange way?
I think the new selfish Sarah.
Yeah, yeah.
Has found it a lot easier than Sarah would have done previously. Mm. Mm. I am now wholly focused in a almost obsessive way around just having some good fun, good yep. times, having served. Joy in my life with people and things that bring me joy. And
that's really important, I think.
That is with friends, family, lovers, whatever that looks like. It's about enjoying myself and however long. We've all got left, but however long I've got left. So that's my priority. Yeah. And could I have stayed in a relationship and worked really hard on it and gone to loads of counselling and done the work? And probably, if I'm dead honest, but I didn't feel like I had the time and energy to do that. And also, I really wanted him to go and be happy.
Yeah.
And he was unhappy too.
So you'd have to worry about him. Yeah.
So selfishly, again, I didn't want to worry about him anymore. I wanted him to be happy. He was unhappy. I was unhappy. What's the point in dragging things out? So, it was shit. But, beep again. But it happened. And now my whole focus is around joy with people who bring me joy.
Good. I think that's a really important part of it.
I feel like I've talked this whole episode.
No, I asked you, and thank you for sharing that. And I think we'll also come on to the subject of dating, which you've done some of, because just because you've got cancer or just because you're being shot at with tons of treatments and chemo doesn't mean that you lose a desire to date. Life does go on while all these other things are happening. And it's important that that can still happen.
Absolutely. But before we talk about dating, please, you can't get away with this, right? Married life.
Yeah.
Married life and also married life whilst on the devil
Zoladex.
Drug.
Zoladex. It's been great. Horses for courses. Every relationship's different, isn't it? And all of us are different. And I think Simon decided that I'm not the sort of person who wants stroking on the head and going there, because I find that quite annoying. So he thought, well, how can I help him? And actually what he's done, which is a really important thing to bear in mind, he thought, okay, I'm just going to take away as much stress as possible. So he runs the household and the cars and the bills and if things go wrong. So he just took over admin, which was just a really practical way to help, which is what he's good at and actually is what really helped me. So that was his approach. And for me, that's been great. So I can concentrate on my work. So I'm still working. I can concentrate on the treatment. I can concentrate on any, hobbies or interests, but I don't have to think about all the boring things. And he's taken on a lot of the boring things. And that was super, super, super helpful. So he's been great, because I'm sure it's very difficult, as I've mentioned, for him at some times. And also a part that's probably more difficult for him than for me, but the aforementioned Zoladex basically gives a bloke the menopause. So it's a hormone treatment. And what it does is, because testosterone, which all men have, that's what makes us masculine, it's what makes us have a sex drive, it can give us energy, it makes our hair grow. That also feeds a prostate cancer. So the Zoladex is there to take away, to block the testosterone getting into your body and therefore slightly starve the cancer. It won't kill the cancer, but it stops it being fed, stops it being growing. So I'm on Zoladex, and in the great scheme of things, it could be a lot worse, but the side effects are quite annoying. We will do a podcast about side effects because there's millions of them. But I do basically have a menopause, let's say. But one of the biggest things is Zoladex is basically chemical castration. It takes away any desire to have sex. Now, the good thing about that is if you don't have the desire for sex, you don't miss sex. So it's not like I want to have sex, but I can't, which would probably be more frustrating. I have absolutely no interest in sex whatsoever. And I enjoyed sex very much, and it was a very important part of my existence and my relationships. So I do still think, God, how weird. I just have no interest in having sex at all. So that's quite a weird thing and difficult one for the partner to deal with too, perhaps. And there are ways of dealing with it. You can take Viagra, but it takes more than, if you don't want to have sex, it's not whether you can't, you just don't want to. So it's very hard to, I just don't. And I've tried to want to have sex, but I can't.
Yeah.
I shall try again. But while I'm on this Zoladex treatment, which is at least for another year, and I've been on it for a year, I think, nearly, that's how it is. The other thing which a lot of men do ask me, so I will mention, is the treatments for prostate cancer can affect the physical workings of your sex life, such as erections. So if you have a radical prostatectomy, which I did, which is where they dig quite deep into your stomach and take the prostate out, because the prostate's so close to your bladder and your sexual organs, and prostate helps make semen. Once you've had your prostate removed, you can't ejaculate. You can have a dry ejaculation, but you can't ejaculate. A dry ejaculation is actually not as bad as it sounds, but it's not quite the same, no doubt about it. For a while after the operation, because, you know, again, it's at the crux of where a lot goes on in a bloke, is it will affect your ability to get an erection because the nerves have been cut. Now, on the whole, they do heal and you should be able to get an erection again. Not everyone can. Sometimes you're unlucky if they had to, you know, be quite brutal around there, then perhaps. But there are ways of getting around that. But certainly for a while, you probably won't be able to get an erection. I was probably for a few months couldn't get an erection, but didn't particularly want one. But that's kind of weird. But then you suddenly think, okay, things are beginning to work again. And then cruelly just they start to work again. You take the Solidex and you don't want it to work. So it's tough. And actually, a few people have rung me up and I always know, and they've said, oh, Jeremy, I've just been diagnosed with prostate cancer and I'm going to do the operation. And one thing I want to ask you, and I always think they should be asking me, will they feel okay? Will they live? But I always know what's coming. Literally go 1, 2, 3, 4. I hear it. Will I be able to have sex? There's so many men worry about, and I understand the fact that will I be able to have sex again? The other thing about the operation around there is it can also affect your ability to urinate, so to hold your urine in. Thank God I was okay with that. But in a way, that worried me more about whether I could get an erection again quite quickly. I just didn't want to have to wear a tenamen, a nappy or a pad. But again, if you are going through that, the tenamens, I didn't need them, but I did buy them because I didn't know before the operation if I would or not. And they try them on. They're quite comfortable, I have to say. I was a bit worried. I thought, oh, these are quite comfy and I don't have to go to the bathroom. But there are ways of curing it. And there are ways of curing inability to get an erection as well. There is the famous penis pump. I have tried the penis pump. The least sexy thing in the world. Say, oh, should we have sex? Yeah, okay, hang on, I'll just get the penis pump.
Is it a foot pump?
It's not a foot pump, but it's the worst foreplay ever. But there's other things you can do. So there's lots of ways around that. But I'm afraid it will, one way or another, affect your sex life temporarily or even permanently. There's no pretending otherwise.
And the whole purpose of this episode is we've talked quite a lot in depth about some impacts that the treatment and diagnosis have had on each of us. But actually, you know, this is the impact on ourselves as individuals and the people that we once knew and how that affects our confidence, but also physical ability is a big thing.
A big
or physical
part.
Desire. Like that was the thing for me with Zolidex. Yeah. I couldn't believe
no
it.
No desire at all.
Literally.
It's extraordinary.
Don't touch me was the core message to anybody and anything.
It was you can try, but nothing's going to happen.
But I like you say, you don't even give it a second thought. Your whole brain is somewhere else doing something else. So I think it is really, really important to acknowledge how that affects both yourself, but also.
And it does. And it's hard for both of you. And once again, there are lots of helplines that can help. There's lots of people you can talk to. There is a lot of support in the area, but it can be tough, but it's not always the end of your shagging days.
And I also think it's important to note that particularly where I'm concerned in terms of breast cancer, Zolidex is not a necessary treatment for all. It's given to some people, not to others. So please don't, if you're listening to this and you've just got a diagnosis or something, don't just assume that this is going to be part of your treatment.
No.
It may well not be. Probably won't be.
And it may save your life. Yep. And you have to go through the pros and the cons.
You've just come onto something that I really wanted to say. And this is the thing, isn't it? The question around these guys that are calling you at Jeremy and saying, will I be able to have sex or whatever? I get it. It's a big part of people's lives,
absolutely.
Right? It's a big part of all of our lives. Yeah. Unless you're on solid. But ultimately, it's do you want to live or try and live or have a good chance of living?
Just write down the pros and cons and also concentrate on one thing at a time. Think, okay, this is really rubbish that I can't have sex or don't want to have sex. But I will tackle that one, but I'm just going to do those other three things first. So just do an order of things to attack. And you talked about how you feel about your body. And obviously, my body's changed too. I've got lots of scars on my stomach. It was 5 or 6 different scars from that. The radiotherapy can affect sex too. I didn't mind that so much. But the Zolidex also somehow can make you put on weight. So I put on a bit of weight, not that much weight. But weirdly, the weight is it's gone to my thighs and my bum, which is definitely part of the testosterone being blocked. So it's almost like the female side of your body is getting stronger. And so it seems to be that's like a female areas to put on some weight. Slowly turning into Kim Kardashian, which was never in my game plan. But Skims for Men are to be launched, apparently. So I could be a model for Skims for Men. But a lot of these things sound terrible, but you just come to terms with them because you have to. And this becomes your new, it sounds such a cliche, but it becomes your new reality. This is it. This is how it is.
Yeah, it does. And I think thinking about new reality as a sort of final point in this, I told you it was going to be a long one episode.
So much more to cover, Sarah.
Is just around new realities and actually not allowing, if you can, and I know it's not always easy, cancer to be the dominant thing in your life, in your relationships. And I think what I mean by that is you are still you. You're a different version of you. Let's not mess about.
Of course.
Of course you are. You look a bit different. You feel a bit different. You're a different version of you. But deep down, you're still you. And I am still a 38-year-old woman who works hard, who takes care of her appearance as much as she can, who cares deeply about her friends. I spend a lot of time doing volunteer work. I'm proud of the person that I am, and I'm straight. I find people of the opposite sex attractive.
Mm-hmm. And you've been dating.
And yeah, it's okay.
It still happens. Yeah.
To go on some dates and enjoy yourself.
You've enjoyed them, haven't you? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you've just been leading a normal dating life.
Right. And this is the really big message I want to put out there, is that if you've listened to some of our earlier episodes, and I've talked a lot about from that original diagnosis where I was so terrified, it was terrifying how terrified I was, right? Yep. To this point in time now, 2.5 years later, where I'm talking to a random microphone and all you wonderful people out there, hopefully there's more than two of you, is that your life isn't over. Lots of scary stuff will happen. You have to make some really super tough decisions. And I've made some super tough decisions, ones that I never expected I was going to need to make, particularly around relationships. But yeah, I've been out for a few drinks and meals with people and I've bloody enjoyed myself.
Yeah, which is great. And of course, there's little conundrums that pop into that, which sometimes we laugh about. When do you tell them that you're wearing a wig, for instance?
Absolutely. At what point do you...
shouldn't have to worry about that in early days of relationship, but in your situation, you do. Yeah. And you just have to sort of find the funny side
if
possible.
And the fact that your eyelash might fall off at any moment. And true. Probably actually has multiple times. But actually, that is okay.
It is okay. And you're... body people find very attractive, or if you dated, I don't know, you feel you look great, you always have done, and you feel good, don't you?
Most of the time I feel good. I do look after myself.
Yeah.
You know how I am about nutrition and various other potions I do.
You found makeup that suits you, found brilliant eyelashes, you found ways to make it look as if you've got eyelashes when you haven't got eyelashes on. You found some blimmin' good wigs.
Honestly, I think we're going to talk about this in another podcast episode. But yeah, fundamentally, I guess I'm really wearing my makeup a little bit as a mask some days. And I never used to wear makeup so much.
Didn't you?
No, I was quite enjoying being a bit more natural as I was getting a bit older. So I do wear a bit more makeup now because I feel a bit more put together. Found some amazing companies who have just been phenomenal supporters, and particularly I am going to mention them is a company that I believe based in Glasgow called Lola's Lashes.
Right,
they've just like been unbelievable. I've sent them a few pictures of what it looks like because it's very difficult. I've got no eyelashes whatsoever. Most fake eyelashes are created in the idea that they stick to your other lashes or close to the... but I've got no lash line. I've got nothing. So they've been incredible in supporting me and trying to help me find the right things for me. And they've been brilliant. So I really like them.
If you do the research, there is a lot. Do they do chest hair? Because all my chest hair has fallen out.
I've got a load of eyelashes you can borrow. We'll just stick them on.
I might do. That's the other weird thing with Zoladex is you lose your body hair.
Do you?
Most of it, yeah. With the radiotherapy, all my pubic hair dropped out. But I've noticed that's coming back again now, a few months later. But with Zoladex, your body hair goes.
I didn't know that because I had it at the same time as chemo, so I'd lost my hair anyway.
Yeah.
Ah,
bigger hips, bigger bum. No, but I'm just worried that I'm just going to look like a giant baby in another year or so.
I mean, I do want to put it out there that obviously I haven't shaved my legs now in like 9 months. It's magical, really. Yeah. I mean, that is a definite...
there are plus points.
That is the one of the only silver linings that it's done. No. But back to serious point. I think the message here is not about dating at all. The message from my perspective to anybody who might be listening facing a cancer diagnosis or partway through a journey is that you're still you and you can still do the things that bring you joy. That might be dating. It might be other things. I accept I'm quite lucky. I don't get huge amounts of side effects, although I do get some and we'll talk about that in a later episode. But on the whole, I'm able to live a fairly fulfilled life. But I really prioritize that.
Yeah.
So I focus every day on trying to create fulfillment and joy for myself. And sometimes that might be going on a date. But other times that might be spending a load of time with my friends and family. Travel is a big one for me. Jeremy, you know that I'm enjoying my travel at the moment.
Yep.
And I'm taking my friends along with me on that journey. And in a few weeks, I'm going away with my mum. So I think, you know, on the whole, joy, fulfillment, in whatever form that looks like, in with those that you care about, in those relationships, hugely important.
I agree. I mean, you lose some things and you gain. I lost a sex drive. I gained a love for chocolate minstrels. So it evens out in the end.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Lots more to talk about next time.
Thank you.